Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. Good afternoon. My name's Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today. Welcome to the 232nd edition of Money Matters, entitled Summer Doldrums. Discussions in the show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only and those of the guests and articles read. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it. It controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. How is everybody today? Well, Dow really hasn't moved much since the last show. 17,803.77 at 12.09 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Big hello to Babette this afternoon. And who else do I got to say hello to? I don't know. Doesn't matter. Say hello to everybody. So, Dow's kind of popping around, you know, still trying to punch through 18,000, either that or fall below 17,000. Nobody knows where it will go. And that's the fun of the markets, isn't it? Where will it go? I don't know. We don't know. We can look at all the earthquakes and cross currents and currents underneath the markets and make an educated guess, but we just don't know, do we? So, we'll talk about summer doldrums. You know, there's an old saying, sell in May and go away. Buy back into the markets in November. It has worked on occasion. You just liquidate everything in May and then buy it all back in November. It's not a recommendation. That's just some of the theory that goes along the sell in May and go away ideology. Does it work? Well, Google up and see if it's worked. Some years it has and some years it hasn't. But there are some very significant studies that gives some very interesting results if that is indeed done. So big thanks to the Dreamwalk folks who are dreamwalking out. Goodbye. Oh, you blew me a kiss. Okay, then. Nice tat. There we go. So elections are coming June 7th, I guess, right? What's the date today? June 2nd. So we got another 5 days before we see whether it be Sanders or Hillary. I think Trump is what? Done deal, right? Pretty much a done deal. Everybody else has pulled out. You know, you would have told me a year ago Trump would have been the front runner for the GOP. I would have said you were crazy. But there you go. I did an experiment. Interesting experiment. I have a couple lots. So I'll put up a Hillary sign, a Sanders sign, a Trump sign, a no on W, which is the pot people. And a yes on W, which is the anti-pot people. And within 2 days, the yes on W sign and the Trump signs were stolen. Two different lots, two different locations. So I replaced them. New Trump sign, the old Bernie sign, the old Hillary sign, the old no on W sign, and the new yes on W sign. And within 2 days, the Trump sign and the yes on W sign were stolen again. No matter where you lay on the issues, right? We got to believe in free elections or we don't, right? So I always say, if someone is afraid of a position, means their position isn't that as strong. You know, if somebody tells me that I'm of Norwegian descent, I don't really care what you say because I'm not. So really, no matter which side of the issue you lay on, I don't think we ought to be tearing down signs. What are we afraid of? I mean, a Trump sign isn't going to make somebody vote for Trump that's not going to vote for Trump. And a yes on W sign is not going to make somebody vote yes on W if they don't believe in it. So it was interesting. Why are people stealing my signs? I don't understand that. Just let them go. It's free country, free election. Why is everybody so angry? Any case, I'm not going to put up any more signs. I'm tired of reposting them. But it is an interesting... One of the lots is in Grass Valley, and one of them is in Nevada City. Didn't matter where I put them. They were gone. So the onerous government implementation of authoritarianism. Is that even a sentence? A valid sentence? I don't know. The war on cash. What is the war on cash? It's a term used by many analysts by detailing the progressive regulations being enacted by monetary authorities to slowly reduce and then, it is rumored, eliminate cash entirely from the society. Have you heard of this talk about the war on cash? The reason given for each addition of each new regulation that is going after cash and cash transactions is to rein in tax dodgers and cut off terrorism money. The reason assumed by many conspiracy theorists is that somebody or something wants to garner complete control over every citizen on the globe by the monetary elites by eliminating your ability to transact in cash. The regulations are creeping, far-reaching, and increasing. Of course, they track cash deposits in bank accounts, asking for identification, usually when purchasing money orders, requiring monies over a certain amount be declared when crossing borders, reducing the size of cash transactions, and requiring the reporting of cash transactions, eliminating large denomination bills, along with a host of many other new anonymous regulations, and they are increasing. Now, keep in mind, Europe just did away with the 500 euro bill. You can't get it anymore. The U.S. did away years ago with the $10, $5, and $1,000 bills. That was years ago. Largest bill now, I believe, is the 100. Now, if you consider inflation, right, just imagine for a moment when decades ago you could get a $10,000 bill. That'd be like having a $100,000 bill. I've heard talk that they're going to eliminate everything but the $5 bill. So you're not going to be able to carry much cash if you got to carry a wad of fives. Go to your bank and try paying a bill with cash. Prepare to show your ID. I know I tried. Buy a prepaid Visa at your local grocery store and prepare to have your driver's license scanned. And in many cases, be required to give your social security number and name on a website before the card is activated. The largest unregistered prepaid Visa at my local Safeway store was $100 2 months ago. There is nothing on the shelf except for 25s now. Credit card and other electronic methods of payment are being encouraged, and the variety of methods being increased electronically, think Apple Pay, are rampant. Social Security numbers, which once were promised to never be used as identification. Did you know that? When they first started Social Security, they said, we'll never use the number as identification. Now, of course, they're usually required for everything. Check in at an airport and scan a credit card, any credit card, and your personal information, ticket, and boarding passes pops up, regardless of whether you use that card to buy the ticket or not. Obviously, they've got them all tied together electronically. Check into a number of major theme parks, and I was surprised, and I was asked for a fingerprint upon entry. That's right. I don't remember which theme park it was, either Paramount, one of those. They said, put your thumb here. Cell phones are tracked, your purchases are tracked, your habits and haunts are tracked, your electronic trail is marked and easily read. Cash is the only thing that is not trackable, and that is the rumored reason somebody or something wants it gone entirely from society. Of course, not that there's any one person in control of everything, at least most of us think there's not. The implications are indeed concerning. If cash is eliminated, your footprint is unavoidable. Your paths easily monitored. Taxes will be easy to garner. They just debit it from your accounts. Need to bail out a bank or a public fund? Easy. They push a button and you pay. No more voting. No need to adjust public interest rates anymore. They just charge more interest on your balances electronically. Avoiding income taxes will be impossible. And if the government needs additional funding, they could just take it by pushing a button for the good of the people. Although currently we can still use cash, and no one or entity can debit our accounts without our consent. I think the IRS can, though. The wheels could be argued to be in motion for a cashless society. The elimination of cash would make the Big Brother 1984 scenario from the popular George Orwell's then futuristic novel that much easier to implement. Although funding for terrorism and tax evasion certainly uses cash and cash-like products to move and acquire off-the-grid funding, the vast majority easily of cash transactions by far are by law-abiding citizens. Many argue that as the wheels of possible tyranny progress ever so steadily, our basic freedoms are eroded, and now possibly our basic freedom to use cash that was rightfully earned and paid taxes on is slowly being taken away. The implications, again, are indeed frightening. What do you think of that? Taking away our cash? I mean, if 99.9% of the transactions are valid, why do all 99.9% of us have to pay for a few people who may not be scrupulous when it comes to paying taxes? It just doesn't make any sense to me. You know, if the terrorists wanted to inconvenience our society and take our freedoms away, then there you go. They accomplished it, taking the freedoms away from 99.9% of the people. So we can catch, what, 0.01% or whatever it is? It's very interesting. So, interesting. I wrote an article on the newsletter. Our newsletter is A Grata, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station, wherever you're hearing the show. And we talked about the perceptive reality of one's self-worth. Well, I won't go into that particular article. You can just read it on the website if you like. But stock prices are the antithesis of perceptive reality. Now, what do I mean by that? All public stocks trade in milliseconds. So how can the stock of a particular company have buyers at the same time there are sellers? And indeed, almost all stocks have buyers and sellers at the same moment. It's because each individual investor perceives that particular stock as either a buy or a sell at that particular moment. Add up millions and millions of investors and what they perceive a stock is worth at any particular second in time, and you get what we have today, a publicly traded moving market. When the markets are open, stocks are moving, which is what we have in the markets of the world today. There are different and changing perceptions, all transpiring at one time. Some stocks are so thinly traded, they may not move much. In other words, there may not be a buyer and seller at any particular moment. But most stocks are so large that there's always buyers and sellers, and you can watch it actively on your screen. They move by the pennies. The fact is, somebody is thinking the stock is a sell, while another person perceiving the stock as a buy, while others choose to do nothing at all. How do we successfully select, successfully perceive, when a stock is a good buy and when it is a time to sell or not buy it at all? Of course, that is the million-dollar question. Every investor in the world asks this question, would a buy or sell a stock? Yet few understand that perception is the only thing that is moving the stock price. It's your perception of what a stock is worth, and will it go up after you buy it? Most investors think information available to everyone, in other words, public information that we're all aware of, is enough to make up their mind to buy or sell a stock. An example is you buy a popular cell phone company stock because they'll sell a lot of cell phones. Well, that information is already out there. Everybody knows it might sell a lot of cell phones. And so that particular fact, since it's public, is probably already priced into the stock. Keep in mind, everybody has that information at the same time, so the odds that your stock price is already valued to reflect that is probably very great. Now, to pick a stock that has the potential to go up after you buy it is difficult, to say the least. Most stocks will go up if the market goes up, but that's never a given. Bad news or poor sales on a particular company could make its stock go down even if the market goes up. And how many times have you seen that? The whole market's up and your stock is down. Or the whole market's down and your stock is up. However, in general rule, when the stock market goes down, most stocks will fall. An investor should accept the best that he can do is to increase his odds of picking a winning stock, and that starts with asking for help. And I give an example here. Would I go into an antique store or yard sale looking for value in an antique if I knew little about antiques? Well, I could go into an antique store not knowing anything about antiques, but the chances of finding a value on one, which is being the one I buy is worth more than what I paid for it, is basically me relying on luck. I mean, since I don't know much about antiques. In fact, the odds are against me finding a good value, and in fact, in favor of me paying market price or even higher for a particular antique. So the person selling the antique probably knows more about antiques than I do. The same exists with finding good value in stocks, or better yet, buying a stock that goes up after you buy it. Those selling the stock, market makers and the big stock people, probably know more about stocks than you do. So if you go into an antique store and the antique seller knows more about antiques than you do, the odds are that he's going to price that antique fairly, which is why we might say that stocks are always priced fairly at any given moment in time. Since most investors don't do stocks as a profession, my opinion is you likely have to ask for help to assist your selection, much like I would ask for help if I was looking for a good value in an antique. The bad news is you usually have to pay for that assistance, but the cost does not have to be exorbitant. I myself pay for... Oh, there we go. What is that? I myself pay for help in woodworking. I pay for help in my health care. I pay for help in interior design if I add on to my house. And I ask for help in many areas I find myself lacking in knowledge, which are many areas. What I don't pay for myself is to pay for someone to select my stocks. That's because that's an area that I basically studied my whole life on a daily, if not hourly, basis. As Clint Eastwood famously quipped, a man has got to know your limitations, his limitations. So know your limitations. Stock price is, much like self-worth perception, stock price is perception only. It's not a measurable or constant value. It's just a belief by someone that will probably always be in contradiction with someone else's belief or perception at any point in time. There will usually always be an investor willing to take the other side of your bet because he perceives something differently than you do. Realizing that stock price is only perception is half the battle. Stocks don't have to go up, nor do they have to go down. What they do is, in fact, move when the perception of a majority of investors believe the same thing. If the majority of investors believe the stock is a value, the majority will buy the stock and it will go up. If the perception of the majority of investors believe the stock will go down, then they will likely sell the stock and the stock will go down. Their perception of what the stock is worth may not be in keeping with your perception. It may not be in keeping with the company's fundamentals or anything at all. Perception is just what is driving the stock price. Your desire, therefore, is to pick a stock where investors perceive there will be more value in the future. Oh, that's my... Sorry about that. My irritating phone ring. Your desire, therefore, is to pick a stock where investors perceive there will be more value in the stock after you buy it. So your perception must be right, and it must be early. So you pick a stock where the perception will be higher by more investors after you pick it. More investors will start to agree with your perception. More and more investors will start to agree with your perception. And therefore, the stock will rise. To ask for help for selecting stocks, there are many, many resources available. And just go to the website of your choice, the search engine, and you can find qualified experts to help you. You are listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We will be right back. My name is Mark Cuniverti. And you're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name is Mark Cuniverti. Thanks for joining me today. So the big question on everybody's mind is, will the Federal Reserve continue to raise rates in their June meeting or stand pat in the face of the latest economic stats? That is the question. Or will the newly announced negative interest rates, where banks actually charge depositors to hold their money, be implemented? It is indeed a strange world we live in when the direction of interest rates and what the Feds will do runs the gamut from both North and South poles as far as monetary policy is concerned. The markets, at least for now, seem to like what the Feds are doing as the Dow again presses up against the 18,000 level. It has never rose above 19,000 to date. And the average Joe, at least on the surface, appears to be treading water. I get this impression not from some economic statistic, but just on the recent experience that everyone I talk to appears to be in some sort of motionless state of monetary limbo, not getting ahead yet managing to hold on to a job, at least. Some of us, anyway. Commodities, the price of many of the basic materials and foodstuffs, are rising a little bit, indicated by the CRB index, which tracks such things. It's up over about 10% just since January. This could mean inflation is starting to ignite, and that could spell pain for the pocketbooks of the American workforce, where the majority of them are having at least some difficulty making ends meet. The constant struggle to pay household bills could be at least part of the reason Democratic moderate, some say socialist, Bernie Sanders is so popular. People are just tired of having a select few reaping the rewards and riding in the cart of the greatest country on earth, while the working majority seem to do most of the pulling. After a half a decade or more in stimulus and bailouts from the Feds and global central banks everywhere to foster some sort of economic recovery worldwide, the most obvious effect, besides stemming the economic tsunami that was 2008 and 2009, is the U.S. stock market seemingly relentless push from around 6,500, which was their lows back then, to the Dow in 2009, which is when it kind of hit there, to nearly triple that where we sit today. Dow's at 17,825, 1234 Pacific Standard Time, Thursday, June 2nd. Noticeably absent from the six-year rally are banking stocks and some energy stocks. With the unprecedented amount of Fed's money going into the banking sector, which comes from the Federal Reserve's own release of information, which was brought about by the Bloomberg 2011 Freedom of Information Act lawsuit, banking stocks are off their lows they hit during the depth of the crisis, but they are nowhere near their previous highs prior to the crisis. Energy stocks also recovered with the overall market after 2010, but of course they were hammered badly in just the last year or so. With concerns regarding slowdowns in many areas of the world as we speak, and even more talk of easy monetary policies from the European Central Bank and the Bank of Japan, and with close to one quarter of the world's sovereign debt, which is government debt of major countries, now yielding negative interest rates, which means lenders get back less than they loaned, an argument could be made the world is not yet out of the woods thrust upon it by the severe crisis of 08 and 09. In the face of a rising market, more talk of monetary accommodation, low interest rates and more quantitative easing is what that is, struggling energy and banking sectors, and economic stagnation or outright recession in many areas around the globe, there are indeed many economic currents and cross currents to look at. The conflicting economic data that continues to pour in and how the world's central banks react to that data is making for one difficult market for investors. And predicting what the central banks will do next is anyone's guess. I sometimes doubt central bankers even know what they will do themselves. You're on to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name's Mark.
On my toes, lots of candy off my mouth. Maybe I'll even
Warrant. Dirty, filthy, rotten, stinking rich. Summer Doldrums. The title of the show today. What do I mean by that? The old adage in regards to sell stocks in May and go away. That's the adage that refers to the historical study of what happens when investors use the method of selling all their stocks in May in any particular year and then buying them back in November of that same year. That's the sell in May strategy. In fact, you would own stocks from November through May and be out of stocks through June through October. This is also sometimes referred to as the Halloween indicator. Seasonality, what we call that, forms around the idea that you are only invested for roughly 6 months of the year, the strongest, traditionally by some studies only, for the stock market. You buy in once during the fall, traditionally November 1st, and sell in the spring, traditionally May 1st. The next 6 months can be spent in cash, bonds, or other similar safe investments, so-called safe investments. Based on some from Business Insider's website, some rough historical observations, some would decided that it might be a great idea to stay out of the stock market between May and sometime in the fall. The truth is that the market doesn't tank during that period, so says Business Insider. Returns are just lackluster, not necessarily negative. FBN Securities J.C. O'Hara ran the numbers for the past 20 years and charted the returns. He said, O'Hara said, one is selling not to avoid losses, but rather selling because there's not much to gain. We are not selling, say, in May, as we are still constructive on the market, but rather our main message is to manage expectations over the next few months of the summer. Average years give managers little to work with historically as far as prices over the summer months. From the Personal Finance Syndication Network, however, there is no 100% certain answer why seasonality works so well. Now, that's their opinion. There are quite a few events happening between those months. To name a few, there are Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and other related religious holidays. New Year's, Valentine's Day, St. Patrick's Day, Easter, and Mother's Day all come within those months of the fall and the spring. Black Friday and Cyber Monday sales, back to school spending, employers making contributions to employee retirement plans, employers paying UN year-end bonuses, tax refunds arriving in the spring, small business owners who make up a majority of business in America close their books and pay themselves a year-end early spring bonus, and publicly traded companies pay quarterly gains and dividends, many of which are reinvested. Many companies will also pay a bonus dividend if their company has done exceptionally well. According to their source, since 1950, from November 1st to May 1st, the Dow Jones has not had a loss in 54 out of 64 years. That's an 86% success rate on the sell in May go away mantra. Given this rate of return, one might find it a hard argument against the sell in May and go away methodology, but opponents and basic common sense reminds us there is no 100% solution on how to make consistent returns in the stock market. Let me repeat that. There is no 100% solution of how to make consistent returns in the stock market. It baffles even the best of us. Remember, past performance is no guarantee of future results, as we always say. But as was mentioned earlier, a strategy, according to them, with an 86% success rate since 1950, might look attractive. This is just one strategy. It's best to compare all options. Never stop looking for an answer, and of course, never stop asking questions. Personally, my experience tells me once you think you have the markets figured out, they somehow always find a way to put a big fat thumb up your nose and hammer a methodology you thought foolproof. The one lesson we can take away from this is when it comes to investing and the markets, nothing is foolproof. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. That's right. course. Phone call is always welcome. Looks like we have a phone call here. Let's see if I can get this board to work. You're live on the air with Money Matters.
Hi, Mark. This is Ross. Great show.
Hey, Ross. Turn down your radio. We're getting a little bit of an echo.
I just turned it down. Yeah.
There you go.
I couldn't hear the radio on the hold music.
Sure.
I got two quick questions back to your cash observations, which I've noticed too. One is, how much money is traded, like the currency changes every day? I know there's a lot of money that's made and lost.
You know, I don't know that figure, but the currency markets are humongous, so I don't know that, but I'm sure it's in the billions and billions.
So that's sort of going, that's the pressure against cash going away completely,
well,
right?
If it went away completely. Well, the point is that's electronic cash. So that's trackable. What they're talking about is hand-to-hand cash transactions, which are not trackable.
Which brings me to my next question. I've noticed that I'm able to use Bitcoin, although I don't have any in my pocket, which I guess it would be on some kind of a memory stick, to buy my coffee. I think there's some bookstores I've seen that'll take it. I don't see any big companies taking it, but where does that fit in with this cashless society?
Well, you know, if we were to believe that they wanted to eliminate cash, then anything that was off the grid and not trackable, they would go after. I'm kind of surprised that Bitcoin hasn't been pursued more, but because
unless there's a backdoor already.
Yeah, well, I really don't know. You know, Bitcoin, you know, because of its wild swings in valuation, it really doesn't have one of the inherent qualities in a currency, which is, you know, maintaining value. I mean, it goes up and down like crazy, and so it's a very volatile.
Sure.
And I know that Paul Castro here wants to do a show on Bitcoin, and, you know, I've read things about Bitcoin over and over, and I still don't understand how it works.
Me either. I thought you'd tell me.
I have looked about the algorithms on how it's created, and every time you create it, it gets harder to create, but, you know, it's just, I don't understand it, so I don't know. I don't know.
But well, thanks, Mark, for answering my questions. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
show as usual.
Well, thank you very much.
You're a real credit to the station.
Now you're making me blush.
I'm going to hang up now.
Thank you, my friend.
Mark. Bye-bye. See you next.
Okay, I'll take that and boost my whatever. But in any case, I've got sort of a, you know, I put out this newsletter and sometimes I do some funny stuff. You know, I do some travel logs and everything. So I did one on big box stores. And I'll just kind of read it to you. Big box stores, the Costcos and the Sam's Clubs of the world, they make their profits in a sector where profit margins are less than stellar. Foodstuffs are traditionally a low markup item, and although these superstores sell more than just food, the methodology of just how these giant retailers stay in business is by selling in bulk. Bulk, selling in bulk, lots of stuff. What this means is the famous quip, they make it up in volume. Low profit margins, they make up in volume. This generally means if you sell a lot of a low markup item, you still make a profit. Make a few cents profit selling an egg may not sound like much, but sell a zillion eggs and you're talking real money here, folks. I love going to superstores, as I'm sure most of you do. The rest of you might find it a necessary evil in order to save money. I do hate the crowds, of course, and the usual long walk that I will take from the parking space that I managed to find a block away due to all the customers. But the experience is obviously enjoyable for many. My 91-year-old dad loves it. He loves all the sample food they give out, and if you go on a weekend, you can literally have a full meal there by the time you traversed all the aisles. I know my dad loves it because he's the only one I know who will travel 50 miles to get there and walk out with one bag of peanuts and a steak, a total of worth about $15. My last trip to the superstore was the usual trip, which means I've never gone there without dropping a few $100, and more often than not, I drop over $500. I've got 3 kids, what can I say? I imagine many of you have had similar experiences. Anyway, I entered the Costco in Roseville, and I was greeted by 47 TV screens, all airing the same program, The Price is Right. That's an old game show where contestants pick door number 1, or door number 2, or door number 3 for crazy prizes. Talk about viewing the world through a fly's eye. I mean, Flies have like a zillion eyes, so it is thought they see multiple images of everything, which is why is it so hard to swat them. How do you sneak up on a fly waving a zillion fly swatters? Anyway, so I'm there in Costco, and I'm zoning out at seeing door number three. Actually, I'm seeing 47 door number threes, and they open up, revealing a brand new car. Well, actually, 47 brand new cars. My eyes are bugging out watching 47 of everything, so I blow past the TV section with my cornea still intact, only to see the plant section. For a second, I thought I saw 47 plant sections, but that was only a temporary after effect of the TV department. So I find myself looking up at a 16-foot-tall bottle palm, thinking, who has a car that big to fit this thing in? Keep in mind, the plant, for me, is an impulse buy. I think it is for most of us. I myself have never made a trip to Costco to buy a plant. Never bought a plant there. I go there to buy toilet paper and staples like everyone else does. And I don't even think about buying a plant there. But Costco, being Costco, does everything big. So I see the size of this 16-foot bottle palm, and I say, no. The booze section is usually next, and although I like vodka, I just can't bring myself to buy a 3-foot-tall, 5-gallon bottle of vodka. The image that would give to myself and everyone in line would be that I live off the stuff and I'm a raging alcoholic, neither of which is true. I would rather pay more for vodka at my local grocery store than buy that huge bottle of vodka and carry it out in front of everyone. As mentioned, superstores make a profit by selling more stuff, but at a lower profit than smaller grocery stores. They succeed at this by forcing you to buy more by only selling huge quantities of everything. I needed cumin spice that day, and in a not-so-rare moment of insanity, I bid on their cumin sale and bought their smallest size of cumin, a 1-quart bottle of it. It's so big I will likely have to leave it in my will, unless I discover a zillion ways to use cumin, which I highly doubt. I imagine other oddities are sold there, like hearing aids in 3-packs. Think about that one for a minute. 2 shrink-wrapped 1-gallon bottles of Listerine, which makes the checker pull back a bit. A bottle of 10,000 one-a-day vitamins, which is about 27 years' worth. A box of 50 onions, which is why I might need so much Listerine. 1/2 cow? An 8-pound cheesecake? Really? 400 hot dogs or a 20-pound pack of frozen pot stickers? I mean, really? Do people actually eat that much stuff? I guess. But Costco convinces people, like me, that I need a quart-sized bottle of cumin, which is one reason they are so successful. They play on people's eyes being bigger than their stomachs. So now, instead of ever shopping for cumin again, I will need a longer last will and testament in order to cover the leftovers when I die from cumin poisoning. They do have quite a system there. No grocery bags, just boxes, pull carts for the overshoppers and overindulgers, and forklifts for those who will go really overboard. The super box stores, you got to love them. Now if I can only find the exit door out of the 47 exit doors I blurringly see. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station.
Money.
Yes, I did write an article on the perception of self-worth. I got a lot of good responses from that. I did get one negative response. I did mention God in this self-worth article, available on the website moneymanagementradio.com. It's no cost or anything like that. It's just the community radio station's way of saying thank you for listening to Money Matters. But I got a lot of people that love the article on self-worth, self-esteem. But one person, anytime I get a negative email, I always read the email, but I didn't bring the email. But basically he said he doesn't want his economic advice mixed with religion. So we wrote him back and thanked him, and he unsubscribed, and that was that. And so, you know, I gave him some points of view. He gave me his points of view, and we left amiably. Is that the right word? Amiably? We left on good terms. So, but that happens. It is my website, so I can basically put on whatever you want. It's like a TV station, right? You don't like what you see on TV, just turn the channel. You don't have to actually destroy your TV. But that was his opinion, and I value other people's opinions, negative or not. And I think over the, you know, I've done this show since 2006. What's that, 10 years? And I've done, you know, thousands of newscasts and probably 1,000 newsletters, probably more, and 232 shows. And I've gotten probably 5 negative letters in all those years, which is not bad, you know. I kind of pride myself on that. I mean, Steve Baker, our program director here, said once, Mark, the more popular you get, the more people won't like you. More people will like you, but a lot of people won't like you. And I took that to heart. You know, Steve's been on the radio a long, long time. And, you know, I look up to him, and he kind of guided me through this whole thing. And so when he said that, I said, you know, he's right. I mean, he's right. You know, you're always going to have somebody that disagrees with you, steal your signs. But, you know, actually what Steve told me really, really helped. You know, I was kind of sensitive. And so when he told me that, I thought, yeah, you know, he's right. I'm sure that popular people, movie stars, you know, all have some people that don't like him and like him. And I guess that's probably okay. You have been listening to Money Matters, the Summer Doldrums show, show 232. My name's Mark Cunabretti, the host of Money Matters since 2006. And the show emanates live from our studios at KVMR FM in Nevada City and then rebroadcast over a variety of community radio stations, and we thank you for that. But we must remind you that discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendation or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Again, my name's Mark. God bless. Have a great day. And the next 2 weeks I will be on vacation, so you'll hear me back in July. So I wish you all a great June. Love you all. Thanks a lot. This has been another edition of Money Matters. Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of myself and my guests, and are opinions only, and may not represent those of this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. This show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. The information given on the show was obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing, but is not guaranteed. This show was pre-recorded at an earlier date, so the market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at the time of airing. You can order past shows or comment on our show by sending me an email at mark@moneymanagementradio.com. Money Matters is produced and recorded at the studios of KVMR FM 89.5 in Nevada City, California. You can visit our website at moneymanagementradio.com. Thanks for listening.
get back. I'm all right, Jack. Keep your hands off of my stack. Money, it's a hit. A dime.